Welcome to the Deep Side of Dallas podcast. I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System, here with my co-host Rudy Bush of the Dallas Morning News. In recent years, the City of Dallas has made a concerted effort to make accessible green space as part of the city's identity. And in this episode, we'll take a deeper look at a key piece of the green space initiative, our city's trail system for hikers and bikers. On September 30th, ground was broken to begin construction on the final phases of The Loop, a 50-mile circuit that will allow trail users to safely access all that Dallas has to offer. And our guest, Philip Hyatt Haig, Executive Director of the Circuit Trail Conservancy, is leading this development. Philip, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Great to be here.
Thank you a lot, Phil. I really appreciate you being here, because I think one thing that, as I think about Dallas as a city, that we have a bad reputation, deservedly, or have had a bad reputation sort of through the course of history, of paying good enough attention to the natural world around us and incorporating the natural world kind of into our daily lives. We aren't a city blessed with a whole lot of what you would think of as great topographical features here. But I know that at some point in our relatively recent history, the city made a really conscious effort to devote itself to creating a trail system that would rival trail systems of cities around the country. But I'm not sure that all of us really know where we stand in that. And so maybe the right place to start is for you to give us a sense of where did we begin in all of this and where are we now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great way to start this conversation. I think Dallas is a world-class city, and we have some really amazing amenities here. The one thing that we are focusing on right now is, exactly as you mentioned, is having a world-class trail system and also helping shape the identity of Dallas towards a more green space-focused city. And so, I think that this really started about 15 years ago. The city of Dallas, they created a trail master plan. And that actually was updated in 2008. I see you have a copy of it there in front of you, Rudy.
I do.
That was the first document that really got this the citywide vision in motion. And that was a study that was put together and adopted by Park Board and City Council. And they said, this is the plan over the next couple decades that we want to go after and we want to accomplish. And it includes trails in all 14 council districts. And that's really the roadmap for what we have on the system today. So those are all the existing trails, the Katy Trail, the Santa Fe, the Strand Trail. We have all these disconnected pieces,
right,
that are really amazing, and we saw their use go through the roof over the past year during COVID. But I think right now there has been this concerted effort to bring those pieces together. To connect to the trail system and also to bring those amenities to other parts of the city that haven't had them in the past. Green space and access to trails is now being seen as something that everybody deserves and not just a luxury or a recreational amenity.
Yeah, and when I moved back to Dallas in the mid-aughts, just sort of between the time when the city, I think, made the commitment to figure out a way to get trails into the bond, and then the 2008 trail network plan, the only trail I really knew of was the Katy Trail, and I think that's because you could go get a cold beer at the ice house.
Yeah.
There. But it's changed a lot since then. So, I mean, how much trail have we added in this 15-year span?
So right now we have over 150 miles of trail on the ground in Dallas. So that's really impressive. I think the thing that makes it harder for people to visualize that and to understand what that means is that they're not connected very well yet. I think that we had some really great progress recently with the SOPAC trail that opened up that connects White Rock Lake all the way up to, right now it stops at Greenville Avenue, but that's going to eventually connect into the bridge that's under construction into North Haven. And that was really, a signature piece of an effort that was by the last council, and especially Councilmember Kleinman, to make this connection across US 75, which is a huge obstacle. And so to have a dedicated bicycle and pedestrian connection is going to be a huge statement for our city and for where we want to go. And so the magic of what the loop is actually that the connections that we're trying to make are the ones in that master plan that are the most difficult.
Yeah.
They have the hardest geographic obstacles. They have the most stakeholder input or ownership. And there are also areas that we haven't had, either the political will or the funding to get delivered in the past. And so this effort that I'm currently working on, that my board has been working on for many more years, it's leveraging those investments that have been made over the past 15 to 20 years, and then going to create something that is a catalyst for additional trail development across the rest of, and you know, hopefully fill out that master plan. The loop itself, you know, this is something that is we're working on right now to create an awareness around, is the loop is actually 39 miles of existing trails. So the trails that you just mentioned, the Katy Trail, you know, the Santa Fe, those are all going to be pieces of the loop. And so what we're doing with the Circuit Trail Conservancy's effort is we're just building 11 new miles. And we're making those critical connections through those geographic obstacles that I just mentioned to bring those pieces together to unite that trail system and also put trails in every quadrant of the city, so north, south, east, and west. And then when those 11 miles are finished, you'll have a 50-mile point-to-point. So you can start in one place, go counterclockwise or clockwise, end up back where you started 50 miles later, and you'll never have gotten outside of a protected place for bikers and pedestrians.
Safely.
Yeah,
safely.
No, I'm fired up about that as someone who's on the trails a lot, and it drives you crazy certain spots where it'll just end, and then you're kind of hosed, right? Like I'll... trail, which is the one over by the design district, that is
the Trinity Strand Trail.
Yeah. That one makes me insane because you end up right at 35 in Oaklawn, and you might get killed by traffic, and you're going uphill. There is a tough one to get back to the Katy Trail. So the portions that are being completed, as I understand it, there's the Trinity Forest spine, and then we're also going to expand the Trinity Strand Trail that we just talked about, and then where does the Highline Connector fit into all of this?
So the Highline Connector does exactly what you were just talking about. It connects the Strand Trail and the Design District over to the Katy Trail, and so that project is actually going to run along the Highline Median in the Design District. You know, the iconic trees and the art.
Yeah.
The trail is actually going to meander through those features, which is going to be really incredible. We're using the existing roadway under 35, and we're actually going to be expanding the sidewalk, you know, this elevated protected condition, and we're narrowing the traffic lanes.
Oh, okay.
And so that's going to slow traffic. It's going to prioritize pedestrians and bicycles. And we're also doing lighting underneath there as well, so that way people can see, you know, when you're walking under there, you know, in fall or in night and stuff like that. And so that connects over to Houston Street. And that's where Houston has that connection down to the Katy Trail at grade right there in front of the American Airlines Center. And so that project is actually out to bid right now.
Yeah.
That design is 100% complete. That's a partnership with TxDOT as well as the City of Dallas. And we also recently received an additional, you know, a tranche of funds from the City Council through the TIF district. And so recently we saw that the City Council said this is one of our priorities as well. You know, this project is going to be A, state of the art, but also B, means so much to future development. We believe that it needs additional funding to really bring this up to the level that we want, because you know, I think trail projects, they really undersell what we're doing here. You know, this is going to be a new way to get around Dallas. This is active transportation. You know, we're spending almost $2.5 million on new signals, on traffic signals.
Yeah.
And that's going to be ones that prioritize pedestrians. They have this is the craziest thing, they have radar in the signals that detect you as you walk up or ride up on your bike, that start the signal for you. So you don't even have to push them anymore. You can push them and they'll activate, but they now have, so this, you know, if you're on a bike and you're riding up to the signal, it'll automatically sense you and start that countdown to switch over to, you know, a pedestrian signal to allow you to cross. And the reason why that's really important is because, you know, I mean, if you ride bikes around or if you've seen people on the trails, cyclists don't always pay attention to the traffic signals. You know, you see people run red lights. And that's because
Are
a lot of times,
Paul?
I'm certainly guilty from time to time, although I do slow down first.
Yeah. You can tell they're looking side to side saying, okay, am I ready to go? And, you know, and I think that's like the unfortunate reality of Dallas right now is that, a lot of those signals, they don't respond. I think that they're not even connected to anything. The button is just there for you to, you know, like a stress ball. And so this is a new piece of technology that will incentivize people to follow the traffic signals, follow the law, because not only is your safety prioritized, now it gives you an incentive to actually cross.
Well, I know we want to talk about kind of the trail system as a transportation system, but since I'm talking about my own trail experiences a little bit, you know, I started riding the Trinity River stuff just on the levee paths, right, that are created for, you know, trucks that go in and out of there. But it's been interesting to see so much new paved trail added in recent years, and obviously that's a part of the loop. But the other thing that interests me that I was riding the other day, and I'll typically explore until I hit a dead end, I ended up on paved trails up to Irving and the Campion Trail, and I understand that is eventually supposed to connect us to Fort Worth through Grand Prairie, Arlington. Can you talk on that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the Fort Worth to Dallas Trail, and that was actually announced a few years ago that was fully funded. There were the five mayors at the time, Betsy Price and Mayor Rawlings on the two cities at the end. They all came together and they said, this project has been fully funded. And so that means, you know, from the cities that are participating, once you have funding, the projects are as good as done. So it just takes time for them to be developed. And so that means in the next few years, I believe it's a total of 67 miles from Fort Worth over here to Dallas. You'll be able to ride your bike. I'm assuming people will be riding their bikes. Walking 67 miles would be really tough.
Could be a long day.
That would be a long day. But that means that project is fully funded and that it's either almost complete with design or under construction. So here in the next few years, that whole thing will be open. And it connects through five cities.
Is there anything left on the Dallas aspect of it? Because again, I rode paved pathway all the way up to Irving.
Right. Dallas met their deadlines. They did complete that, and it now crosses the Trinity over into Irving, as you mentioned, in the Campion. There's some really difficult parts because you do pass underneath highways, and I think a couple toll roads that they are still working on, because obviously those are barriers that are kind of difficult to figure out how to do it safely. But it is happening. It's a done deal.
Well, I think it's interesting to think about the evolution of how we view these trails, because my recollection is there was a period of time where people were really reluctant to have a trail sort of come through their neighborhood or cross their main street, and there was a thought that this will bring in the wrong element, whatever that means, or something. But the opposite really turned out to be true, isn't that right? It seems like these trails just have an enormously positive economic impact wherever they go. Do you have any insights into that?
Yeah, I think a lot of that, you know, really has to do with how you communicate with the public. You know, how are you talking about this trail before it goes to construction? You know, I was actually at a community meeting a few years ago for a project in Oak Cliff, and it was not being received well by the community for some of those exact same reasons. And I think, though, that it's up to the organizations and the entities that are delivering those trails to help inform the public of what that will mean. Because right now, if you think about, you know, you mentioned the Katy Trail.
Yeah.
Back before the trail was there, you know, that railroad was not active for some time before the trail went in. So the railroad was decommissioned. You had an empty corridor that just gave people a straight shot to pass through. And so most of the people that were back there, I wouldn't say most, but there are people who go back there that are, you know, wanting to get away. They're trespassing or, you know, doing illegal activities. And so that's kind of what people perceive. Well, if you just pave that, you're going to make it easier for them to come in and out. Well, no, if you pave it and you turn it into a public space, what you're doing is you're actually shifting the use, because an empty railroad track doesn't have a use. You know, nobody that's, you know, you don't go there looking to go get a cold beer or
right.
using that trail, you know, to get to work, because, you know, you're crossing grass and railroad tracks. So then when you open this up and you say, instead, we're going to program this, we're going to put pavement down, we're going to allow the public to come in here and welcome them, then that actually changes the way that people use that area. And so, you know, I think that there is a lot of education that has to be done when you're working on these projects to make sure that people understand, well, the element that you have back there today isn't going to be there when this trail is built if we do it right. You know, if we go in here and we invite the public in, you know, the guy or the person that's back there drinking a bottle of beer, they're not going to be there in the future, because they're not going to want to be there with a bunch of people walking down with their families or their dogs. You know, so it's really about education and also making sure that you do the outreach with the communities.
It's actually interesting how I've seen people on our trail, the North Haven Trail, engage the trail. And I've seen different fence designs that kind of open the yard a little bit up to the trail, and the trail becomes a sort of extension of the backyard. And I don't think I could have imagined that 15 years ago, people being so receptive to having this public experience so close to their private home. But it seems to be something that works really well in large part because that trail is constantly populated with people, and it goes back to the Jane Jacobs thinking of eyeballs really on your home are safety. And whether it was the front stoop in New York or now the trail in your backyard in Dallas, you're almost in a safer sort of position because you're there with everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the friends groups are vital to making the system continue to be vibrant.
Maybe explain those for our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are some of the trails that exist in Dallas have friends groups. So they're nonprofits that have partnered with the city of Dallas to do additional programming and maintenance on those trails. So I think the most well-known example is the Friends of the Katy Trail.
Right.
That group, they actually raise money every year to put the types of plantings and the tree trimmings, and they do events and activities on the trail. That's all done by that friends group, the Friends of the Katy Trail. And that's obviously the most intensive model. They actually have staff that help put that together and maintain the trail as we know it. But then most of the friends groups in Dallas are actually volunteers. You have a lot of people who live off the trail who want to dedicate their time to making it better, to putting out types of programming that they want to see. And so you have these groups of volunteers that come in and they say, here's what I can do in my free time to continue to improve this space. There are some really active ones. The Friends of North Haven Trail and the Friends of the Santa Fe Trail are very active. And that really sets the tone because they're the local owners of that trail. They have a lot of pride and a lot of ownership over what happens along there. And so if you've noticed, the Santa Fe Trail had some new trees that were planted there. There's new water fountains and benches. Mm-hmm. And that's all happened in the past few years because of the Friends group, really coming to support new types of amenities along that trail. The cool thing, the thing that I loved about the North Haven Friends group is that they have a blow-up movie screen, and they do movies alongside the trail in the summer. When it gets dark, they do, blow up this movie screen, do a projector.
Did and that can right come across the street from you, Rudy, over in the Royal Club Royal area.
Oh, is that right? I missed movie night. Oh, well.
we talk about these positive impacts, and the other one I would be curious about, because I can think of only two examples that I interact with, and as I think we've said now three times, hey, having a cold beer is a good thing on the trail. So I'll go on my bike when I'm tired. I'll stop at Katy Trail Ice House, or I'll stop at White Rock Ale House, and those businesses clearly thrive off of action coming from the trail. Are there other places where we think the completion of the loop may help businesses like that come about and thrive? I don't know zoning for commercial, non-commercial, but it seems like it'd be cool if we had a few more watering holes along the route.
I know you wouldn't complain.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's recognized now that being adjacent or on the trail is a benefit if you have like a restaurant or retail. And I think that is really coming into the way that these developers, that some developers are really targeting, what they want to build there. Having that ground level interaction, because, the reality is that Dallas is now, our geography is defined. Dallas, the space that Dallas occupies is not getting any bigger. So that means we're going to have to get denser over the next, 20, 30, 40 years. And the way to do that is not through single occupancy vehicles and single, car trips. It's, pedestrian, bike riding, active transportation, because, just think of how many bikes you could see up in front of Katy Trail Ice House versus all the cars. I mean, it's a mess if you want to try to park there on the weekends.
Sure is.
So walking or biking is definitely the easiest way to get in and back out of that area. And so I think that as we continue to see, the successes of these areas and other places outside of just the Katy Trail, like the White Rock Ale House, more and more businesses are going to try to open up and leverage their proximity to the trail. I think the best example that I'm most excited about is what's going to happen in the design district. With the trail going right there, you already have these really great multifamily projects that are going in, and you already have some amazing restaurants right there, right on Highline with like Meddlesome Moth and Ascension. And now you're going to have this pedestrian connection that could take you from a multifamily or a hotel in the design district right over to the American Airlines Center in 15 minutes, and that's by walking. I mean, that's just going to change everything, and all the zoning there if you want to get wonky, it's all mixed use, you know, 60, 100 foot. So, you know, they don't need any zoning changes. And the best part is there's not any, you're not kicking out any residents if you tear down a warehouse and build up something really tall. Most of the stuff there is you know, one story warehouses. So, you know, this is going to be coming much quicker than I think people, and this is just going to spur, the trail is just going to push this so far into the future. So I'm really excited about
that. And where does that piece, the Strand connection, fit into the timeline?
So the Strand is already built, and that's on the ground.
Connecting it to the Trinity, I guess, is what I'm
Oh, okay. So that project is under design right now. Okay. So we're actually going to be connecting from the Strand Trail down into the levee system to the one that connects to that Fort Worth Trail. That's in design right now, and that'll go to construction next year.
So, and we previously talked about the Highline piece. What comes first? I'm trying to get my arms around the
river. So as you mentioned, we have our Trinity Forest Spine Trail is under construction. The first phase of it is under construction.
That's ground's broken. We're underway.
And, you know, we anticipate 12 to 18 months of construction for each of these, depending on weather. You know, if we have a really dry summer, this will go really quick. If we have a really wet, you know, fall, winter, and then summer, it'll be closer to 18 months. So the Spine Trail, Trinity Forest Spine Trail, under construction. The Highline Connector will be under construction in the next couple months. And then the, we're calling it the Trinity Gateway, the one that connects from the Strand into the Trinity itself. That's under design right now, and that'll go to construction late next year. And then we have a final gap that connects the Santa Fe Trestle Trail into the Trinity Forest Trail, and that we're going to wait on the adjacent trails that are next to it. There's some that are adjacent to the where the core is working right now. And as soon as those come online, we can then build that last connection. That one's fully designed, and it's a really short bridge over Cedar Creek. So that'll happen. We just need to make sure that it aligns with the timing, because we don't want to be an organization that builds a trail that you ride over and then all of a sudden doesn't lead anywhere. You know, we don't want you to get into that dead end. We'd rather make sure that, oh yeah, these pieces actually work together and you can use it.
And what's the prospective timeline for all that? What's the best case scenario, knowing that everything takes longer and costs more than we ever think it will?
That's right. 2024. For everything. Open.
Wow. Terrific. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
The overall vision, we, you know, Rudy kind of led off with it, that we, you know, made an effort to get to where we are, and we're darn close to crossing the finish line as far and having the loop completed. But how do we compare it to other major cities? Yeah. Who's the best at doing these kinds of trails, and maybe anywhere that we emulated?
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, when it comes to a loop system like this and a comprehensive trail network, you know, there aren't a lot of competitors. I mean, you know, you think about, like, Milwaukee has a much more active bike culture, or an active transportation culture. I think Austin is perceived as having that. But I really think that once this project is done, we're going to catapult up into, you know, one of the best in the country and in the world pretty quickly, because, you know, the thing that I was talking to, you know, one of our consultants about is that last year, Austin just, they passed a huge bond. They did a tax increase for additional infrastructure, focusing on transit and trail development. But that was also a huge tax increase. I mean, I'm all for public infrastructure funding, but you know, the problem is that cost is then passed on to every resident who's paying property taxes. And it was significant. It was, you know, over 8 cents per $100 valuation. So that people are going to see that. Whereas here in Dallas, we don't talk about it, but the 2017 bond passed without any tax increases. You know, TxDOT's a huge contributor to our project with $8 million, and Dallas County is also a multi-million dollar contributor, along with other city funds. No tax increases there. So I think that we just need to do a better job in Dallas of talking about what we've done in the past and where we're going, because we're doing so much. It's just that we're not, I think that people aren't aware of it yet, mainly because it's not connected. But, you know, in the very near future, especially as construction just started, and we're going to continue to have a lot of awareness and attention to these projects, you know, we're really going to change the perception of where Dallas is nationally in the next couple of years.
I'm glad you brought that up, because it's an important point that I think a lot of people don't fully grasp here. One of the reasons I think the trails are a little bit maybe underground, for lack of a better word, if they are underground, is because we don't talk about how much they're costing us. We don't talk about them as a major public investment. They are a major public investment, but I think they're one of the smarter public investments Dallas has ever made, for a couple of reasons. One, you know, we're using bond capacity that we have. Two, we're not raising taxes to do that. We're also taking advantage of existing rights of way. The Encore right of way, which was nothing but a junky, you know, I won't say it was weedy because I think Encore probably mowed it once in a while, but nobody was using it for anything except for transmission lines. And then, of course, the levees, which they do us a lot of good, but it's a passive good until you get on a bike and ride it. And so I think for that reason, we don't really think of it as this investment. We only think of it when we use it, if we're users of it. But I will tell you that the biggest gain in value that I've seen in this city in terms of just dollars for the tax base are along that Katy Trail. Just in terms of how real estate has been revalued, just based on this strip of concrete we decided to put down so people could ride their bike and have a run and have dinner, go shopping along Knox Henderson, whatever they're doing. And nobody talks about the payoff. And it just is massive for this city. So maybe talk a little bit about that. You know, and Paul touched on this earlier with new businesses coming in, but I just tend to think this is going to be, over time, one of the biggest returns on public investment that we could possibly get.
Oh, absolutely. So in 2017, leading into that bond election, the City of Dallas Park Department and some partners, including Trust for Public Lands, commissioned a study, an economic impact analysis for the park system. And leading into that, they found that Dallas parks specifically returned 7-to-1 ROI. So for every $1 invested in a public park, the city was getting $7 back in value for those adjacent areas. And that's pretty incredible.
Excellent.
For trails, it was 50-to-1.
Wow. Amazing.
It was off the, they did note, you know, the Katy Trail did skew that because the Katy Trail had seen such unbelievable success. There's been over $1 billion in valuation increase since that amenity opened, and it's only been 20 years. So that's a huge shift in that amount of time. But one of the things that it noted, though, in this study, which was provided by HRNA, so a well-known, international firm, it said that these are all linear improvements. So, like, if you invest in the Katy Trail, then the improvements in the area are going to go up linear. But then if you connect them, it's exponential. So now all of a sudden, if you're a user of the Katy Trail, okay, the Katy Trail Ice House is full, so where are you going to go? Well, now you can just hop over to the Design District and go over to Meddlesome Moth.
Right.
Or now you can just hop over to West Dallas and go to Trinity Groves. And so all of a sudden now, the growth is no longer linear. It's now exponential in a curve. And so the new valuation, once the loop is complete, it's going to be much higher than 50-to-1, and it's going to be spread out over a much larger geographic area. That's one of the reasons why I was really excited when we were talking about the pillars of the Circuit Trail Conservancy and what the loop was going to bring to Dallas. One of them was economic opportunity. It's because we really do see this as a value driver when you put an amenity like this in front of people's neighborhoods to say, hey, all of a sudden, Pleasant Grove, you're now going to be in the loop. You know, the same amenity that people have in Uptown, you're connected to that.
Right.
And that's going to be in your doorstep, and you're going to be able to get on it and go up to White Rock Lake or go over to Fair Park. It's all going to be connected, and it's going to be this huge value driver.
Now, one area I haven't figured out totally how to leverage trail riding is Oak Cliff. I'll go through when I'm in the levee system. I get over to the other side. That's great. I'll go ride my bike around Bishop Arts or whatever. But what's being advanced in that area?
So the Coombs Creek Trail is getting an expansion right now. That's actually going to be going to construction soon, and that will connect the Coombs Creek Trail, which runs on North Kessler, into the Margaret Hunt Hill Bridge, mm-hmm. and the I-30 bridge that just opens.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll connect you into downtown on the east side, and then on the west side, it connects further into West Oak Cliff. I think that the most exciting thing that's happening, though, is that on top of all the trail development, you need to have strong pedestrian and on-street facility connections as well.
Yeah.
You know, trail's never going to go to everybody's front door. That's just not practical. So, how are we also improving sidewalks and bike lanes that are safe and protected and comprehensive so people know where they're going so that way, where it doesn't make sense, Bishop Arts is pretty built out. You don't want to put a trail there. But you could definitely put some bike lanes, on. I think there's actually some being planned right now for 8th Street.
Okay.
That connect into that. And so right now the City of Dallas has a really strong transportation department. We have a new bike planner So I'm very excited that we have somebody who's coordinating those efforts. And also the council just passed an additional $1 million in their budget every year. So now we have $2 million a year that's dedicated to actual construction of bicycle facilities. And so, you know, especially in West Dallas and Oak Cliff, you're going to see a lot of those facilities start to connect here in the next few months as those continue to come online. I think the next challenge is going to be, how do we let people know how to use them? You know, when you come up to, there's some new bike lanes on Fort Worth Avenue, you know, people need to know where those go. So if you're riding down here, you know where to get off safely or where to turn around and go to somewhere else. And that's something that we're going to work on here in the next few months with the Circuit Trail Conservancy in the city of Dallas. And some of our other partners is how to wayfind around the city.
Yeah, a lot of times you'll just hit an abrupt ending and you'll be like, oh, well, what do I do now?
Yeah, exactly. And so we need to have very clear wayfinding signage so that people can come to a trail and say, okay, well, if I take this trail half a mile, I'll end up at a DART station, or I can, you know, jump over here and I'll take this sidewalk over to, you know, whatever venue. So I think that, you know, we really are putting in the infrastructure, the actual on the ground. And so now we're going to need wayfinding as our next big piece of this puzzle. And the great news is that everybody's receptive to it. You know, that people want this. They think, oh, that would be really helpful.
I need it. I need it because I'm not as adventurous as Paul. I don't want to end up at...
A lot of trial and error, man.
I don't want to end up at a dead end. I get too nervous. So I'm curious whether you think this is all having any kind of impact on the what we think of as the car culture in Dallas and the car-first culture, because I love to ride my bike. I love to use the trails, but I don't certainly don't use my bike yet to get to work. I don't really use my bike to do anything but recreate on my bike. But are we having an impact? Do we have any information that we're changing the scope here?
So we don't have any hard evidence yet. Yeah. I mean, I think COVID kind of threw a wet blanket on what we would project. But I think that the biggest change that you're going to see in the future is the affordability of electric bikes. You know, we're about to reintroduce scooters next year.
Are we happy with those on the trail? Because I'm not.
I don't think that the trail is always the appropriate place for them. But I definitely think that you have on-street options. I mean, one thing is that our bike lanes in the city aren't used very frequently. So what if we allow bike lanes to also accommodate electric scooters? You know, that's something that we hadn't tried before, but it would give people more opportunity to say, hey, we want things like this. But electric bikes are amazing. I don't know if you've ridden any of the new ones, but, you know, it's amazing for people who are, you know, not wanting to put on spandex and go ride around at 20 miles an hour. You could wear a suit and get up to 20 miles an hour and, you know, have an electric assist there. So I think that that's really going to change as that continues to become more affordable and people understand. Because if you've been to New York City...
I saw them in Europe, too, in Germany, where it's quite hilly and you'd kill yourself going to the store or whatever, but yeah.
Yeah.
Let me just make a note of no spandex here.
Yeah.
Reference.
Well, you know, we were in New York a couple years ago, and, you know, just all the people that were using electric bikes for delivery jobs and for, you know, moving around, I just thought that this is where we could go in a much easier way, and that would impact the car culture, because I think that, you know, the region is huge. We're going to continue to have people who live outside of the city and have to come in for work. But, you know, if you're thinking about, well, how do I want to go out in the evenings? You know, like I live in Oak Cliff, and my wife and I don't even go to Bishop Arts anymore because...
It's too crowded.
Yeah, I mean, especially if you're driving there.
Right.
You know, it's a mess, even on the weekdays now. And so, you know, it's much easier for us to get on our bikes and ride up and just park somewhere. And then that way you don't have to worry about... You know, there's now a valet for Oak Cliff or for Bishop Arts, just for the district, you know. And so I think that, you know, people are going to use this as, you know, they're going to start out because it's easier. And then they're going to start using it because it's more affordable, it's more economical, it's quicker. So I think that's really what we have to do, though, as the people who are implementing these projects, you know, the Circuit Trail Conservancy, the city, the county. We have to prove to people that this is a shift you want to make. We can't just say, hey, you just should do this on your own and not have a compelling reason why.
Right. And as we kind of wrap up the conversation here, let's say, you know, everything's gone perfect, that's in the works, 2024, we've got the loop, and, you know, we're really a leader in this trail culture. Where does an organization like yours put its eyes next? What what happens after that to make things even more robust and utilized?
I really think it's the wayfinding effort, because that's going to be something that you wouldn't ever limit. You know, I mean, right now we have a complete street manual with the city of Dallas. So every time a new street is built, they have to consider, okay, well, where are your utilities? Where are your sidewalks? How does this impact, you know, with trees and all these different considerations? And I think wayfinding could be a part of that. So that way, wherever a trail is not built, you have bike lanes, pedestrian facilities, and they have signage that connects everything together. And that wayfinding effort would take a long time. You know, I mean, I think that you know, what we would envision to help shift, to make that car shift, you know, away from cars, would require a huge investment and a huge study. We actually are looking at bringing in a firm that was just selected to do the wayfinding for the Dallas to Fort Worth Trail. So they're coming in from out of state, you know, because we don't have that expertise here in Texas yet.
Interesting.
But they're saying, okay, well, we need to coordinate with five cities. You know, how do we make signage that crosses city lines for 67 miles? And so COG selected them, the North Central Texas Council of Governments. So I was like, oh, these guys, they must be good then. And so we're talking with them to see, well, what would it take to bring that into Dallas? You know, to make that wayfinding connect into the loop and then all the other trails that are in there. And so that's really, I think, a much larger effort. It would be, you know, expanding our citywide impact. Right now we're in 9 council districts with the loop, 14, you know, all of them, the entire city, and then also out to the suburbs, and especially down to the south, you know, DeSoto, Duncanville. They put in a lot of money into trail systems. And right now, unfortunately, that plan that you have from 2008, they didn't look at the connections down south.
Right.
So all those trails
that sounds
go
familiar.
North. So, but I think that now you have the right people.
City, right?
Yeah. Well, right now we have the right people who would be able to say, hey, if we were to look at this again right now, we would make those connections south. You know, because it's, we'll get into some actual geography, as you mentioned. You know, down in Elk Cliff, you have bluffs and you have elevation change. And I think that people are going to really see that as somewhere that they want to go.
I agree. Absolutely. No, there is geography to explore in this city. It just tends not to be in the areas that are already developed or that are well-traveled, I guess, is a better way to put it. So I think it's a great investment for the city. I'm glad you came and talked to us about it. I am just sort of curious, if people just want to get into using the trails, if they want to go figure out how to have a good time on the trails, where do they go? How do you get started just to enjoy yourself?
Oh, that's a rough question, because I think that, you know, we don't quite have what would be like a user manual for how to use the trails. You know, that's something that I think that our organization is looking at and would want to take on. But it's a tough question, because, you know, people don't want to go and put themselves into danger. You know, if you are wanting to go and ride your bike somewhere new, you know, you need to know, where is that? You know, how do we get around? You know, on our website, we do have an interactive map of where the loop is, but it's not for wayfinding yet.
What's that website?
Oh, there you go. Good call. Yeah. It's theloopdallas.org. And so we do have an interactive map that'll show you where everything is, including the existing trails. But, you know, we're still working on, or we're still trying to figure out, how do we help people understand what this is going to mean for them? And that's something that's going to be on us. You know, for the next few years, as these projects are under construction and open, you know, I think that a really good example is looking at how the Santa Fe Trail has changed use over the years. You know, when I first started riding on it, there weren't very many people using it. And now if you go on it on a weekday, you have lots of kids who are walking to school.
Yeah.
I believe that's Dunbar. And, you know, you have people playing on the basketball court right there. So I think the uses have really changed and developed over the years. And that's what we would want to see and provide an example of for these other areas that are getting new trails, to say, hey, you know, you don't have to wait 15 years to understand how to use this. We're going to show you what it is. We're going to talk to you about it. And hopefully that will really, you know, increase that shift even quicker.
That's been my experience as well. I quit going to the Katy Trail, you know, went sometime around 2011 or 2012, because it was so crowded. And I felt like, boy, you know, which bicycle is going
to
run
me? It's tough to ride a bike through there sometimes.
It was tough to ride through there, and all of the, you know, wannabe Greg LeMonds and Lance Armstrongs who are plowing through. But then, you know, my own little neighborhood trail, not very crowded when it opened. But now it's got a good buzz of people on it. I tend to think y'all's problem is going to be have enough capacity over time and having to figure out ways to expand these things. And I have no problem having that kind of problem in a city. I think that's a great problem to have. So really love the trails and really hope the best for them.
We look forward to following the growth along, and thanks for helping us kind of fill in the gaps of understanding how it's all happening and when. To our audience, thank you for listening to our podcast. Feel free to email us at deepside@dallasnews.com with questions, comments, and ideas. For Rudy Bush, I'm Paul Corliss. We'll talk to you soon. The Deep Side of Dallas is presented by the Dallas Morning News and the University of North Texas System. Our show is produced by Aiden Barrett.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please support the local journalism behind it. Go to join.dallasnews.com and select a membership that works for you. Until next time, I'm Rudy Bush.
And I'm Paul Corliss. Thanks for listening.